Hello and welcome to the greatest weekly Celtic podcast there is and always will be, the Cynic Weekly. I am your host, as ever, John Smith, and this week I am joined by a very handsome panel, a rugged handsome panel. First up, he's always here, he's Christopher Somani. How are you?
Evening, John. Terrific to be in your company again. How are you?
I'm good, aye. No, been on in a while. That other arsehole's been on, you know what I mean? So it's good to be back. We're also joined by Callum Gordon. How are you, Callum?
I'm very good, mate. I'm delighted to be back on the pod of the people, so thank you very much for having me.
The pod of the big word that Somani says that I can't pronounce.
Proletariat.
That one. I can't say that one. It's great to be back. We've got lots to discuss, and I don't think... I mean, when this podcast is going to be sensationally positive, and I don't know the last time where we've had such a positive podcast, and it's not even started yet. But let's take everybody back to last Wednesday. Obviously, we recorded the weekly on the Tuesday, and for the build up to the Rangers game, and we spoke about what the team would be and kind of our hopes and dreams of how it was going to pan out and things like that. To win the way that we did, Somani, to emphatically dominate them for, you know, in two very different ways in terms of the two halves, which I'm sure we'll come on to later. But how much of a statement do you think that performance makes for not just Ange, just obviously Ange, but the team and the title race in general?
Seismic in terms of its impact on our psyche as a team, that squad, the belief they'll have. I mean, I think they took a major step with the cup final because that's you winning a trophy. But to get that, you know, bad run that we had kicked into touch in such a style is massive. You know, I mean, I don't think you can underestimate what that's going to do. Thinking back to the first time they beat us and however long it was, you know, I think at the time we were a bit dismissive of it. I think I've talked about that in the recent past. But it was huge for them. It changed their mindset, and we've seen their performances get incrementally better against us. And I think it's the exact same for us. I think we've seen some of that bullishness from them in the days after it. You know, Ryan Jack came on and the game changed. We dominated that game apart for 20 to 25 minutes. That's crap and they know it. And it's that convincing themselves and kidding themselves, whereas the truth is staring them right in the face. You know, we played them off the park, as you say, in two different ways. I'm sure we'll come and talk about that. And yeah, it's quite frankly, you know, it's just flipped everything on its head from where it was.
Calum, I think it's the kind of strength of mentality in the squad and obviously Ange's instilled in the team. You know, it's one thing to play well against maybe lesser teams, but when it comes to the big games, being able to step up, being able to, you know, 15 games at that point to go in a title race, to take it to them, take it to the league leaders, beat them convincingly, and then take that mantle as being the ones at the top of the tree. It's huge, and it felt huge at the time.
Absolutely. It was... First and foremost, it was a brilliant night. It was felt like so long since we'd had that feeling again. But it was also great to see that the players weren't overawed, because, you know, having the 60,000 support and no away fans, you know, it can go brilliantly like we saw on Wednesday, but it can also flip very, very quickly. But we didn't look phased at all. Went out and executed a game plan and made them look very, very mediocre. And I watched the full game back on the Friday night with a few beers, and because you never really enjoy it at the time, and how comfortable we were. It was, you know, genuinely really, really impressive. Everybody looked like they knew their role and knew it really well, but not only that, they were really, really up for it. And we've all seen the clips of Callum McGregor, Colin Barish, it's a shite bag, or Juranovic laughing in Kent's face, but you just got the sense that, you know, they really, really fancied it. And, you know, I'm just so glad that we didn't bottle it, because if we hadn't got a result there, the league by no means was done. But you'd always have that question mark, you know, hanging about in the back of your head, that can this team really, really step up in these games where it matters? And you didn't want to lose the momentum, like we said, from the League Cup final and going on. You know, the run we've been on has been incredible. Barely been behind for a minute of football since going back 19, 20 games. And that was, you know, arguably the biggest test we've had all season. And we not only came through it with flying colours, it was a stroll in the park, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to mention Cal McGregor there. And, you know, we obviously debated that a wee bit, although I think we all kind of thought last Tuesday that if he's training, then chances are he was going to be playing type thing. But it was still massive, so many, to see him start. And then, as Callum says, I mean, the little snippets, like when he barked at Barisic, calling him a shite bag, and the way he, like, we're going to come on to talk about the centre halves in a wee minute, but watching it back, fair enough, I think Kemar Roofe and Arfield were kind of taking their turns at trying to kind of mark him, kind of man mark him, so that he wasn't an option. But he was always kind of free, and you know how good Cal McGregor is in tight spaces. He can always receive a ball. But he was I'm going to be snidey here, but he was doing a James McCarthy, and he was hiding a bit, deliberately hiding, so that the centre halves didn't use him as an option, because he was trying to occupy whoever his marker was. But he was, if you watch him, he's constantly dictating to the centre halves where they should be playing the ball, constantly talking, constantly pointing, and just orchestrating the whole thing. But right from the word go, first couple of minutes, he kind of goes into a tackle. It's a nothing ball, but he just wants to boot it. But he set the bar, he set the tempo, and along with the crowd, who, I mean, the atmosphere, even just come through the telly, seemed absolutely incredible. But a real captain's leader's performance for McGregor.
Yeah, and before the game, obviously, we were a wee bit concerned about our midfield options, because of where we were. Fast forward to Sunday, and then if you fast forward to maybe next weekend, the options in midfield are huge. Now, see if you'd put out a midfield of Hitati, O'Reilly and Rogic, you know, that's a fantastic midfield, but it still wouldn't have given you what Callum McGregor did. And it's a word that's not been used before. Well, it's been used before, but not recently. It's that intangibles about certain players. And we talk about Brown having that. You get that with McGregor because he's been around the club for so long. He's, you know, he gets it clearly. You know, he's ingrained. He's in what it means, those games and what they mean. Now, I think the performances of Hitati and O'Reilly, and we'll talk about them, were absolutely stunning. But him being there, orchestrating that, was required. And I think it was absolutely huge. And to come out, you know, with that mask on and to play the way he did, you know, to come out the blue, it's a measure of him. Because last season, along with so many other players, he got real criticism. And rightly so. You know, I mean, there was factors around that, you know, specifically the manager and things like that. But there was people were, I don't know if people were openly questioning his ability to captain the side in the absence of Scott Brown. I wouldn't go that far. But people were questioning whether Scott Brown would be a loss this season for his leadership qualities, not so much his footballing qualities. But what you've got is a leader who's, you know, we don't even need to compare them, but we've got those leadership qualities that Scott Brown had in Callum McGregor, and just a far better football player as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was another podcast that was talking about it, and how he kind of managed to channel his emotions and his aggression in the right way, just like a lot of the team did on the night. But I think that was the thing. See, watching him, he looked like he was a man possessed. Like, he is desperate. And just like we would all be, in, you know, his comment about, you know, any one of us would wear a face, you know, go out there with a broken face and play. You know, little things like that. It's that humility and being conscious of how privileged he is, but how very, you know, he's no different to any one of us. But the way he went out, he was so determined as an individual to make this happen. Again, as you say, to right the wrongs of last year, because that would have hurt him probably more than it would have hurt any of the other players.
Absolutely.
So it was fantastic to see. Callum, the first half and the second half, it was a big kind of, there was a contrast in how we went about things. Let's take the first half, for starters. Probably the best 45 minutes of football we've seen from a Celtic team in years.
Yeah. You said Callum McGregor looked like a man possessed by every single player on that park, playing for Celtic that night. You know, really, really looked like they had the bit between their teeth. And the football at times was great, and the way that we worked the wide areas and pulled them apart and made them look like a really poor side. The football was great, but it was also the determination. We didn't give them, you know, a minute on the ball. We never let them settle. There's no better feeling in a derby game when you know you've got the opposition rattled, and you could really, really see that at certain points that, you know, especially when you watch it back, they did not look comfortable. They did, at no point did Rangers look like they wanted to even be there, to be on that park. And the second half is obviously a little bit more controlled and everything, but that's the level of aggression and movement and tempo that we were promised when Ange came in, and a lot of us were, you know, initially sceptical of, you know, can he really turn this around with this squad of players? And you know, he's definitely proven a lot of people wrong, and it's a joy to watch. You know, you watch that team do that to Rangers side, who has performed, you know, over the years fairly well in the Europa League at a decent standard against largely decent teams. And not only coming away from that game of buzzing about, you know, the 3 points and the win and the manner of it, but you also think, this is just the beginning. Where can this team go? Because, you know, I fancy us, you know, against a lot of decent European, maybe not elite level, but top European sides, if we went out and played like that, we'd give them a real game and stand a good chance of taking points off them. So I think that was the really heartening part of it, because you came away from the game thinking, not only, you know, have we won here, but you can see we're really, really building something. And it was a real galvanising moment, I think, for Ange and the support, and really got you thinking of, you know, I've heard people talking about, you know, Conference League finals and so on this week, and probably need to temper that chat a little, but you do begin to sort of dream a little watching that 45 minutes and, you know, just how good could it be, because it's, you know, nowhere near the finished article yet.
So, Manny, just before you came in, for all the games that they've won against us in recent years, I don't think they've suffocated us the way that we did to them in that first 45. Like, they could not get out. We just held them there, pinned them there, and fucking choked them and took the goals that we wanted. It was utterly dominant.
Yeah, I mean, they've beaten us a few times, but the only time that they really put a few past us was the last game of last season when Kennedy was in charge, and it was obviously a dead rubber. You know, a lot of the games last season, you know, there's a debate about whether we deserve to win some of them that we lost. You know, people talk about the New Year game. It doesn't really matter, to be honest, but it wasn't a doing. I think everybody can agree on that in terms of the way it was. But just going back to some of the points Callum made there about the manner of the victory and things, we seen that really early under Ange, you know, with the 2-6-0s at the start. And then that was tempered. And he's always talked about playing that way, you know, the Dundee game and the St Mirren game, and that's what we were promised. And we seen that in patches. You know, I think we were away at Easter Road when we won 3-1 and we got, like, some nice patches, and we could see that that's the way the team was developing. And that was fine. You know, there's been ups and downs in the first half of the season. We were always told it doesn't really kick in with Ange until the second season. But to see that last Wednesday, and more importantly, to follow up what we've seen on Sunday, which was probably a more complete performance over the whole game in terms of that attacking style, safe in the knowledge that we don't have all our players back. You know, they've only been playing with each other for a handful of days, some of these guys. It's still kind of early on in his reign. That's exactly what it is. You don't look at that and go, that's the finished article. You look at that and go, how good could it get? You know, and we need to temper it sometimes. I think that's right, because I immediately went, yes, can't wait, going to Albania for the conference final, you know, jumping ahead of ourselves. We do need to temper it to an extent. But see, when you're dreaming, it's not like the impossible dream. It's possible in terms of where this team could go, you know, how good we could get. But they need to keep winning. But you know, I'm not saying that we won't, but that's the standards there now. They need to kind of keep building in that. I think the fact we've got more options there, the squad depth is definitely stronger. That's going to stand us in good stead. But I'm absolutely buzzing to watch us just now. Can't wait for tomorrow.
It's some contrast to where we were last season. I mean, it puts the rebuild that's happened, you know, in a relatively short space of time. just highlights how well we've got, you know, how well we've done and how much we've got right. And I know people, obviously there's other things going on and things came out yesterday and people don't want to praise the board, obviously, and we're not certainly not going to go on one about the board, but decisions that the club have made in terms of recruitment and things have been excellent. And we've done things in the right way and in the right, you know, in the right time frame. And it just shows you what maybe could have been if we'd got this right in previous years. But I think to put it all into the perspective of where we were last season to where we are now, and we're trying to temper our expectations of going to the final of a European competition, like, it's madness. But as you say, it's just a beautiful, beautiful team to watch. Baby making football, as Barry Gallagher would say. But the game itself, I think watching it back, and Calum, you probably say the same, having just watched it, but the back four especially were so important to how we went about things. And I probably missed that at the time, especially the centre halves. I mean, the tactic was pretty clear because we tried it so many times, where CCV and Starfelt only ever really passed to each other or the wide men. They would never play to the fullback, really. And we saw that it was a wee bit different at the weekend against Motherwell, where they were trying to find Juranovic and Taylor because they weren't quite playing the same role. But the centre-halves, they were the one getting the ball out to the wingers as quick as, wingers staying really wide and hugging the touchline to start things off. But, you know, we've talked a lot, Calum, about ball playing centre halves and how we don't have any, and that, you know, we're missing an Ayer type and all that sort of thing. Does that kind of go to show that actually, okay, you don't have a player who's renowned for it, but you've got two competent players there that if that is the tactical plan, they can adapt and they can do a job?
Yeah, very much so. I think they're both, you know, more than competent footballers. I mean, I thought on the night it takes a real bravery in that sort of atmosphere and that level of occasion to go out there and try play that kind of football, because there's a lot of lesser footballers who that might be your game plan, but all of a sudden you're faced with 60,000 scheme fans and, you know, a good rival, and that can go out the window very, very quickly. But we were really calm and really methodical about it. As much as it looked like a whirlwind first half, it wasn't. We really, really picked them apart, and I thought, with the exception of maybe one pass from Starfelt in the second half where he gifts it to Roof, I think, the back two were really, really good throughout the night. And, you know, that can happen when you're asking footballers, when you're asking centre half to play like that. You know, if a central midfielder misplaces a pass, nobody thinks anything of it. They are the last line of defence, and any mistake is highlighted, and it's the nature of being a centre back for Celtic, where we're never going to get another Van Dijk, it's very unlikely, who can do pretty much everything. And, you know, even he made mistakes. So the mistakes do look bad when they happen. And Starfelt has been one this season, particularly when he's made mistakes, they've looked really, really terrible. But I thought they were incredibly solid all night. I thought they really relished the physical battle. But then they were also able to keep the composure. And, you know, we opened them up down the sides, like you said. I thought, you know, the way Greg Taylor drifted in and opened up space for Jota, and the same on the other side with Juranovic. We've been so used to seeing Rangers teams that clog up the centre and are quite happy to let us have the ball out wide, because in past seasons we've not been able to do much with it. I don't think this Rangers side is quite as organised as Gerrard's Rangers side, but even so, I think we showed that this is an entirely different proposition coming up against this side, and we were really able to manipulate them and manipulate the space so, so well. And for all the goals and chances we created, there's some amount of others where we're only one pass short or something doesn't quite come off and it's another opening. I thought the two fullback, I thought the whole back four were excellent all night. And I think, you know, it's definitely as good as Starfelt and CCV were. It's also, I think, Greg Taylor's best performance in a Celtic shirt by far. And I thought Juranovic, that's maybe one of the best performances I've ever seen in a Glasgow derby. He was absolutely phenomenal all night.
Yeah, Samani, I mean, every time, you know, CCV or Starfelt got the ball, they'd play it out to Jota or Abada. And as soon as they'd done that, then Juranovic or Taylor would run down that half space and even if they weren't looking for a pass, most of the time it was just to confuse things and to draw people away and create space for others. And in the eights, I loved it how each time Abada gets the ball, Juranovic run makes the run, and then you had O'Reilly coming and going advancing ahead of Abada, you know, and it was that wee rotation, but we had it on both sides working so, so well between the three sets of players. But I mean, as Callum says there, Taylor and Juranovic, both absolutely excellent going forward, but defensively, they were so, so good. I mean, that one, Taylor takes the ball, I can't remember who he took the ball, was it the Man U boy? Takes the ball off him in the first half, and then, I mean, Juranovic had a... As Callum says, superb. I mean, he'd a number of big moments, big highlights. But, I mean, the two fullbacks is probably the most obvious use of the inverted fullbacks I think we've seen in quite a while, because Ange started with it. It kind of looked as if it wasn't really happening quite so much. It wasn't maybe so obvious, but it was so obvious, so clear. It worked, and those two were brilliant at doing it.
The two of them were absolutely excellent. And the thing about Taylor is he's been criticised by... a lot of the Celtic support, and I mean, people on here, let's be perfectly honest about it, you know, I've criticised him in the past, and you know,
yeah, but when he's shite, you've got to say he's shite, but when he's good, you've got to say he's good.
Absolutely. But what I will say about Taylor, regardless of how, you know, his performance was excellent, that balance of having a natural left back, you know, that's something we've been missing. You know, playing Juranovic at left back, Juranovic can do a job there, right? But I think what we've seen was, Callum said it, other people have said it, that was a complete right back performance, you know? And Taylor was absolutely excellent too, and that's that balance there in terms of, he's had a run of games now, Taylor, and Juranovic has had a run of games there where they can bed in and they can kind of play the system that Ange wants to. That's really, really important. You know, it's one thing that we've forgotten about, that we've not been able to play those two consistently going forward, and I think you've seen that becoming more apparent against them. It just started to work, and it's something that Postecoglou wants us to do going forward. And you can have a debate over whether or not we can upgrade in Taylor or whatever. See, right now if he performs like that, and he performed really well in Sunday as well, that balance is fantastic for the team, and that's what was really, really, really pleasing about it. And what we also need to mention for them, Kent, huge player for them, or perceived to be, you know, talking about selling him on for far, far bigger money than they bought him for, you know, linked with Leeds. Diallo, however many tens of millions of pounds Man United are supposed to have bought him from, that was supposed to be, you know, how are you going to cope with these two guys? And to be perfectly honest, it was embarrassing. Diallo's a young guy, you know, he's coming up here, he's trying to get first team football and stuff like that. It's easy to be overawed in that atmosphere. Ryan Kent's supposed to be this, you know, big game player who takes a game by the scruff of the neck, really creative for them. He was dreadful, absolutely dreadful. But one of the main reasons he was dreadful was who he was up against, and that's what's so impressive about it. They defensively were solid, and they were so solid in attack. Taylor and Juranovic, and more please, that's all I can say.
I think for me, their worst player of the night was Aribo. And he was the one that we spoke about last Tuesday. We said he's probably our best player, but he was fucking terrible, him. But anyway, let's talk more about us. Rio Hatate, I can't, every time I hear his name now, I want to say the other rhyming word that starts with a B. You know, the category.
Oh, right, the wee cartoon,
aye. That's good. So Hatate, I mean, his goals are sensational. Especially, obviously, the second one, brilliant awareness, brilliant ability to just kind of bend it around the defender and in. But his defensive work was fucking phenomenal. I mean, I really did. I kind of think, watching it back that first half, certainly, I felt as if his two goals were kind of a bit odd, kind of the odd ones out. Like, he didn't really do much else in an attacking sense, other than kind of linking the play. But his defensive work was fucking phenomenal. I think Cal McGregor made the point that they had watched it back. They'd watched a clip of it back, the run that he makes, kind of length of the pitch into his own box to kind of usher the ball out and that sort of thing. I mean, Cal, it's we bought him for like a reported 1.3 million. Like, I think we need to make a donation to like fucking charity or something because we've robbed him.
It's ridiculous, that level of player. I mean, you look across that whole team actually, and the level of player we've got in for the spend is absolutely absurd. Same with Juranovic and so on. But Hatate, once again, was really, really good. I wouldn't even say it was his best game, but that's because he set his bar so high. But he just does the basics really, really well. His weight of pass is brilliant. His awareness of space is really, really good. And like you said, he absolutely works his socks off for the team. And that was, you know, when we came into the winter break, it was called early. Part of you was sort of thinking is we've got away with one there because we've essentially played half a season with Rogic and Turnbull, neither of which were considered number eights at the start of the season, and we've just about made it to the finish line, the halfway finish line of you know, playing them pretty much week in, week out. And we knew that there was more to come if Ange get the type of players in that he wants, and there's clearly still a big role to play for Rogic and Turnbull, but you're really beginning to see now the type of player that Ange wants, and also, you know, how effective they can be in the system. And Hatate's, you know, he's taken to it so well. The pockets of space he picks up, the way he demands the ball and then pops off again immediately. He's already, you look at him, you think he's clearly one of the best players in the league. And that's not even a match fit. You know, whether it's the goals, but also the off the ball work, he's, you know, I really hope we get a good couple of years out of him. And it's, you know, I know he's been in the door 3 weeks and you're already saying that about him, which is testament to the level of quality and endeavour that he's shown. But once he was part of a really hard working unit that night, and he's absolutely incredible. I'm all lost for words to describe him because he's just a joy to watch.
Man, he's the greatest.
Aye, and he's almost so good that he's become mainstream, and I prefer O'Reilly to him. If you know what I mean, it was like people would ask.
Now you're doing a gal.
See, when you're a wee guy, right? When I was, I wasn't even a wee guy. I was in, you know, what age was I when Henrik Larsson signed? Whatever, 16 or whatever. You know, everybody's favourite player was Henrik Larsson, so it was just too easy to say that. Hitati's like that. I know it's really early, but it's just too easy to go, Hitati's the greatest, you know. But that's just because of how good he is. And see, when Ange said at the end of the game he's not even fit, I mean, that just excites you so much because you're thinking,
and
that
he's came off a season in Japan as well. He's not even had a proper rest between, you know, between campaigns.
Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, all that's factoring into it, which is really important because we've got all those players in midfield now. You know, Deguchi's supposed to be coming back at the weekend because you don't want to burn them out and you're not going to have to as long as we can keep them fit. But, you know, Callum McGregor starts, obviously, if everybody's fully fit. Ryu Hatate starts. If everybody's fit, then there's question marks. That's how good Hatate is at the moment. I just, you know, the goal I get at Tynecastle, the two goals that he scored, you know, and as you say, his defensive work, his pass. I mean, that one at the weekend as well, where he played the ball outside his boot you know, see with the weight in that pass, the fullback should be getting that, but he can't get it because his brain can't adjust to it, you know, the way it goes, and that's the level of quality. I mean, Callum says he's at a loss for words. I'm just gibbering now because of how good he is, and I'm really excited that, you know, he's just going to get better and better.
Yeah. Let's go to another man who's been getting better and better, Leila Bada. He obviously scored the third goal. You know, it's kind of his trademark, this kind of running on the blind side of the kind of fullback or the defender and running across goal. He obviously used that again at the weekend, which we'll come to. But, I mean, to get that goal, you know, a minute after the second one, made them look fucking stupid in the process. You know, obviously Barisic hunkered down and all that sort of stuff. But again, we've kind of been talking about this, but again, I think this was the moment that really cemented it for Abada, that he is a changed player. Like, he is taking his game to a different level. there's been a lot of talk about him. I think a lot of people said that he wasn't good enough for the starting 11, and you know, he's just too raw, he's too young, he's not ready yet. But the goal contributions he's made, the impact in big games now that he's making, Callum, he genuinely looks like maybe a very different talent to maybe Hitati, because obviously his role in the team, but he looks as if he could go on to do whatever he wants in the game. He could go wherever he wants in the future.
Yeah, I think leading up to the winter break, people were saying that we might not, if we bring in a winger or something, we might not see much of him in the second half of the season, and that was probably a fair assessment at the time. But the way he's, from that St Johnstone game onwards, where he played through the middle and a few goals that day, he's the confidence that seems to have sort of bred in him, he's just carried that into the second half of the season, and he looks like a player when he's on form, he'll score every single week, because for all those bits of his game that are really rough around the edges, and there are, you know, his first touch still isn't great at times, and he still struggles to beat a man sometimes, although that looks like it's improving. If you could pick two qualities, it's his movement and his finishing. You know, doesn't matter what team he plays in or what vein of form he's in, that's always going to cause teams problems, and it's always going to get him his fair share of goals. And there are two things that you can't teach. You know, you can improve your touch, you can improve your ability to go by a man, you can find solutions to that, but you can't teach that sort of movement of coming from out to in. And, you know, Barisic, as much as he had a shocker, that's an international standard defender, and, you know, left him for dead, made him look like an absolute idiot. And it's because his movement is so good and he knows when to time it, and he's really, really aggressive when he sees his chance. He's right in there. And to be honest, and I didn't think I would ever say this, but if we get a chance now, there's nobody else in this team you want it to fall to. It's Leo Labada, because his finishing is so, so good when he doesn't have time to think about it. He's so precise. He seems like a player that plays on instinct a lot of the time, and I think that's why he can look really raw in his build-up play and outside the box, because, you know, he gets the ball and he does have a bit of time to think about it. But if you put a ball in for him and, you know, just say, go hit that, you know, 9 times out of 10, he's putting it in the back of the net. And he's really kicked on to another level. And like we were discussing about the team earlier, you're starting to think, hold on, this isn't maybe just a squad player or a player who can contribute, but you're actually really excited to see, where can Abada go? Where can he end up in the Celtic side? Can he become like a real key contributor and continue this on for not just a hot streak, but for a full season or two seasons? Because what he's offered for his age so far has been absolutely incredible. And, you know, as much as he got a lot of criticism when he came in, and there was, you know, a lot of people didn't think he'd be up to it, from people that had watched him in Israel, he's proven a lot of people wrong, and he still has a lot of, you know, a lot of elements of his game to work on, but you can't argue with the goals and assist returns. He just pops up in the right places at the right time, and if he's in that, you know, penalty box, tends to make the right decision 9 times out of 10.
I think he's probably benefited from the fact that the team as a whole have got better. We've got more players, big players to, you know, it's not all on him, you know, and he's been allowed to kind of flourish a wee bit more. I think the likes of maybe Jota and you know, obviously now the likes of Hitati and O'Reilly and stuff like that, I can see him being more comfortable in that, because we've got match winners all over the pitch and it's not solely down to him. But I mean, as Callum says, you know, he's still so young, Somani. And right now, I would say, and this is, you know, no offence to James Forrest. James Forrest has been an incredible servant to the club and things like that. But Leila Bada's got that position, and it's his until... Well, I don't actually know if James Forrest could do anything about it, to be honest with you. Until Abada's injured, I just don't see him getting a run in the team anymore, which is a big, big thing.
Yeah, and I mean, on Forrest, Forrest game's based on his pace, you know. The last few games, he's looked as if you're thinking, you know, your fitness isn't quite there. You know, some people are questioning, are his legs going, you know, and whatever, but I don't want to do that. You know, we'll see what happens with Forrest going forward. But you're absolutely right. He's a bad as, you know, that's his jersey just now. And going back to the criticism he got, hands up, I was one of his biggest critics. I think that's because, and we maybe should have taken his age a bit more into account here, but Abada was always sharp in the box. He always contributed goals, and you could tell that there was, he really was. And I think he's probably the purest natural finisher at the club. But some of the performances he had out wide, he literally did nothing. But if he wasn't scoring, he was completely isolated and he kind of meandered. That's changed as well. Now, that might very well be because of the way that the team's playing, and that the rotations that you were talking about, giving him more space. I imagine the manager, who knows far more about football than the likes of me and most other folk, will have built his confidence and told him what to do. And, he absolutely roasted Barisic, despite what some other folk said out there that Barisic didn't actually have a bad game. But he roasted him. And what he needs to do now, he's always been able to score goals and he's always been able to, he's always contributed assists. What he needs to do is work in his game, so more consistently he's contributing where he's not necessarily scoring or making assists. And he's still young, Callum said it, there's still a rawness to his game, but he's shut a few people up, and myself included. I'm more than happy to say that I was critical of him, but much like Greg Taylor, see, when they put in performances like that, you can't do anything but say, hold my hands up.
The second half, we've kind of alluded to it earlier, but it was a very different performance. We showed a different kind of side to it, and it was probably equally as impressive in terms of our kind of domination on the game. We changed things a bit. We didn't have Juranovic and Taylor making the same runs. We were kind of happier to keep our shape. Hatate and McGregor kind of sat a wee bit more like a two with O'Reilly ahead, and we basically just let them have the ball, come and have a go if you think you can, and then kind of dealt with it. And again, it's just a very dominating performance in a very different way. And it's not arrogance. I don't quite know the word. It's not a kind of arrogant way of playing, but it's very much a controlled way of playing, where we knew fully that we were in control of this game and we were very professional and saw it out. I think that gives you real hope. Overall, it gives us a lot of hope. But I think that second half performance, Callum, shows a maturity, shows that this team aren't just all gung-ho, and have to get goals quickly, because I'm sure some people would be thinking that, if you stop them getting goals in the first 20 minutes, then you've got a chance. But, the way we went about things, there's multiple ways to skin a cat, I suppose.
Yeah, and it was really, really pleasing to see, because, I was in the pub watching it last Wednesday and chant at half time, and a few people saying that's it, done. And I'm one of these people that's never fully comfortable playing the enemy until we're 4-0 up, and only then can you begin to sort of relax. And I was fully expecting them to come out first 15-20 minutes of the second half and have a real go at us, and to be under the caution a wee bit and have to ride that out. But we just never gave them any oxygen in the game. We went out there and we didn't press them as aggressively up the park, but we never allowed them to build any momentum or build any pressure. And that was really, really pleasing to see, because when Ange first came in, and you'd hear, the journalists from Japan, like Stan Olivet, saying, be prepared for a lot of 5-4 games and 4-3 games. And I think a lot of the initial scepticism was around that we know we can probably play good attacking football, but the nature of Celtic is that you need to see games out, and you need to actually be quite, solid at times. And I've been pleasantly surprised that, that's not been the case. This Ange side looks like, yeah, they can tear teams apart and press them high up the park and play with real intensity. But we also, ever since almost the Alkmaar game at the start of season, we look like we know how to kill a game. And that was a major criticism labelled at the team last season, is there was a real, or throughout the whole sort of Lennon era, is that there was a real naivety that you didn't know when to, shut up shop and kill the game. And I don't know exactly how Ange has managed that, because it doesn't seem to fit with what we were told coming in, whether that's something he's added or whether it's just the players that he has at his disposal. But it was great to see the way that, we had very few issues in the second half. Ryan Jack, who I'm told bossed that second half. I watched it back, didn't. They, other than a Goldson header maybe near the end, and a 30-yard shot that smashes off the bar, there's nothing in there. And there's also a few chances where, you know, one breaks to Jota late on and he tries to cut inside Goldson. It's maybe the wrong option, where, you know, if you pick the right pass or the right option, we could have really, really embarrassed them when they were trying to push forward late on. But it was like, you know, holding a wee guy by his head while he swing punches. It was really, really comfortable. And it's great to see that that's also an element of our game, because that wasn't initially what we expected. But it's definitely something we'll need, particularly in Europe, but throughout the rest of the season, to see through certain games. And it was really heartening to see.
Yep.
I think we were really comfortable in the second half defensive, and I think that's defensively that's important. I think despite the missed penalty at Tynecastle, looking back in that game as well, we were far more comfortable than we thought. Now that was more tense because of the scoreline and things like that. But part of the reason why we played like that in the second half was through necessity, and that's because of the issue of fitness of the midfielders. O'Reilly's came in and said, I can't cope with this pace. I'm not used to this pace just now. Hatate's not as fit as he's going to be. And that plays into the fact that they can't run the way that they ran in the first half for the whole of the second half. So there was probably a functional need to do that. And that's maybe one of the reasons why some folks said Maeda wasn't very good. It's because we were a wee bit more withdrawn and we couldn't get the ball up to him. But at the same time, that wasn't like we withdrew. And then, you know, it was the Alamo. It was really comfortable. And what's pleasing about that is it's another aspect of our game that we can do. You know, later on in that game, you know, Vickers, Starfelt, they dealt with everything comfortably. Even had McCarthy coming on late. And I know nobody's shouting for the rooftops about him, but he just took the ball, strolled it about, and, you know, it was all very, very comfortable. And that's another bow to our string to our bow, if you will, because we're able to play that way when, as you'd said, Callum, that was never part of the Ange deal. It was always this gung-ho, you know, and we'll concede a lot of goals. That really pleased me, the fact that we could be so solid. And again, also the narrative then changes from them in terms of what they think happened in that game, and that allows them to kind of kid themselves on going forward a wee bit maybe.
One guy that we've mentioned a couple of times, but not really spoke about, just a quick mention for Matt O'Reilly, who was excellent considering it's his first game of that nature and the atmosphere and everything. When he'd already spoken about the atmosphere at Tynecastle, and I think his post-match interview, he was obviously kind of blown away by it. But I mean, again, sensational bit of business for the money that was spent on him. You know, he just looks a fantastic player. I think another thing that on him that he's brought to this team is his delivery from corners. He looks, you know, it could be a massive asset. I'd like to see us score more goals from corners, but you've got to have the deliveries, and he certainly looks like he's capable. The other player is Gigi, but we'll come to him when we move on to the Motherwell game. To leave the kind of the Rangers game to one side, obviously it takes us to the top of the league. It's fantastic, I think, psychologically to beat them, as Somani said earlier, just to get over that kind of, get that duck off our back or whatever it is, monkey off our back, and be able to say we've beat them. And, you know, going top of the league isn't easy for a new team that are, you know, new to the title race and stuff like that, have been chasing for the majority of it, and then suddenly they go top, which takes us into the weekend. You know, the game against Motherwell could have been a tough game for us. I remember the last time we played them away earlier in the season, Gal was talking about it and was pretty nervous about that game coming up because of the potential for a really tough game at Fir Park. And we made it look easy, and we put in a 90-minute performance, Somani, which, you know, if there's one criticism of this team, it's that we've been great in spells, we've been great for halves of games, but this was a real 90-minute performance. We saw some substitutions at half-time and things like that, but to win 4-0 away to a difficult place to go, you know, a few days after going top of the league against Rangers, and winning so convincingly, goals from Maeda, Abada, two from Tam Rogic, who came into the team. Are you, like, how impressed, surprised are you that we were able to get to those levels after what would have been a very draining game on Wednesday?
I'm not surprised that we did it, but I was, you know, a bit nervous that we wouldn't, because that would have been very draining. We've seen the performance against Dundee United after midweek at Tynecastle. I think, though, again, touching on the fact that we were able to bring Tam straight back into the team and for him to perform the way he did. In fact, see, before he scored, I actually thought, Tam's looking a bit sluggish here. You know, he's just come back for international duty.
Old sparrow lungs.
Aye. And a few, I think the Cynic account tweeted that as well, you know. But then Tam did what he does against Motherwell. I mean, I think them and Aberdeen, he's just puts to the sword on a regular basis, and he has done. And his finishes were phenomenal. But I think you're right to highlight that it was a 90-minute performance. We looked threatening throughout that game. Towards the end, we were toying with them. I was getting a bit frustrated with us because we were trying to, it looked as if we were trying to pass the ball into the net. There was one where Jota was just dancing, and I'm like, she's going to shoot. You know, because you see, when you score goals like that, you want more. And it was just a phenomenal performance at a place where you can quite easily be brought down to their level, you know, with the physicality, and it becomes tough. But the football was a joy to watch. As a whole attacking performance, it was better than Wednesday. It wasn't a better result, you know, or whatever, but yeah, just in terms of the way that we play attacking football, we did that for the first and the second half. It could have been many more. And basically when the full-time whistle went, I went, we're going to put 8 goals, 9 goals behind some team at one point, just the way that we're playing. You know, when it's possible that the players, you know, O'Reilly, Hatate, as we've already said, are just in. See, when everybody properly clicks, it could be a cricket score against somebody.
Calum, were you surprised to see Rogic, Ralston and Maeda come into the team? Is it, especially when you win that game Wednesday, you go top of the league, you immediately think, or certainly in my mind, I was like, strongest team, we need to win this. It's you know, Wednesday doesn't matter so much if you drop points today, but I suppose you could say that Andrew's brave and he made some changes that brought a wee bit of freshness to the team, obviously, and rested some players. Were you happy with it?
Not initially. I was the same as you. I wanted pretty much the same team, because the amount of times we've seen Celtic beat Rangers and then go on to drop points against a St Mirren or something, you know, a few days later, it was really, really important. And I initially wanted the exact same lineup, but what do I know? We were great, and the fact that we were able to, you know, kill the game first half and then make substitutions of real quality, I think, was what really allowed us to, you know, play 90 minutes of really solid attacking football. Because, as we've said, you know, we've shown it in spells throughout this season that we can play great football, but quite often Andrew would turn around to his bench and, you know, there was no real attacking options in the first half of the season to bring on and actually affect the game, and he doesn't seem like the type of manager to make substitutions for the sake of it. You know, the fact that you could take off Hatate at half time, the fact that you could bring on Jota or O'Reilly, it was, you know, you're beginning to see now the business that we've done in January and how the second half of the season can really shape up, because we can sustain it for more than 45 minutes or more than a spell. And that was what was really pleasing about it. It was also good that the boys that came in really contributed, because I think since the winter break, Anthony Ralston's been poor in a lot of games. I thought he had a really good game at the weekend. I thought he was really solid defensively. He was a threat going forward. Tam, you know, O'Reilly would have deservedly started that game. But it was good to see that there's real competition for places there now, and Tam comes in and puts in an incredible performance, and you know, you've now got them battling out for that number 8 position, whereas Tam, first half of the season, knew pretty much that provided he wasn't injured, he was starting, and you're beginning to see that real competition within the squad, the fact that we could bring Jota off the bench as well. It's an embarrassment of riches to have it at this level. And I'm really, really excited to see if we can manage that squad well, in the coming weeks, how well we can perform at it. And like you say, you know, I think there's a good chance that a few teams will take a right doing off us, because we now look like we've got enough manpower to sustain that for the 90 minutes.
I think as well, and there is competition for starting places, but there's also that competition because there's going to be rotation, you know, that they are going to get game time during these games. And you've just got to hope that they're trying to seize their opportunity when they come on, you know. You know, I thought O'Reilly was really good when he came on. You know, obviously Cam scored two goals and waltzed off the park or whatever, you know, and that's you know, absolutely fine, you know. But when these guys, you know, when O'Reilly comes on and things, they're then going to be wanting to display what they're capable of doing so that they're maybe in contention for a starting berth going forward from there. But the most important thing is having them all there, when because you will need them, because we've had a lot of muscle injuries for a lot of our players throughout the season. And if you can take Hitati off after 60 minutes and bring on O'Reilly, or even, you know, take Cal McGregor off after 60 minutes and bring Adeguchi on, who looks as if he's coming back, you're going to keep these guys fresh, fitter going forward. So that ability to rotate is going to be absolutely massive for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a headache how you even pick your best midfield. You know, does Tam start ahead of O'Reilly, or, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I having that strength of depth, especially in the middle of the park, you know, where we have been so light and down to three and struggling, it's great to see. Let's talk about Giamakis. Giamakis, over the two games, showed that showed that he's got a bit of worth to this squad. He worked really incredibly hard in both of the games, I thought, down the kind of ugly side of the game. Yes, okay, he didn't score. He had a number of chances in the game against them. And to be fair, if it wasn't for some really good saves and you know, a bit of shite luck, he probably would have scored a couple in that first half on Wednesday night. Certainly gets himself in the right areas, which you can't, you know, can't deny him. But I think it was more the defensive side of the game, really working hard for his teammates. I think we saw probably maybe a slightly better display from against Motherwell at the weekend than maybe Wednesday night, although, you know, I don't, but by any means think he let us down on Wednesday at all. But, you know, he is, as Alan Edgar has said, he's third choice. And none of us, no one's going to sit here and say that he's not. He is. Kyle goes first. Maeda, I think, would be second and he'd be third. However, that's what you want from a guy who's third choice. You want him to show that he can bring something to the table, that he's got worth, that he deserves to be at the club. And I think you've got to hand it to him. His hold-up play, his link of play and things like that has been really good over the last couple of games. All he's missing is that slice of luck in front of goal, but he's getting there, Kelm.
Yeah, I think over the four games, you know, Dundee United aside, where he had a stinker, he's been... You couldn't ask for much more of your third-choice striker to come in and contribute what he has. I thought he was really good at Tynecastle away. I thought he was excellent against Rangers in terms of, you know, he never got his goal, but he very much set the tone with his pressing and his aggression. I don't think that's necessarily his natural game. And I know some of the analysis boys who looked at him when he was coming in at the start of the season said, you know, I don't know if he's a great fit for an Ange system because he's not a natural presser. But he looks a lot sharper and he looks like he's got the bit between his teeth. And, you know, those elements to his game where he does lack the quality of a Kyogo or maybe even a Maeda, but there's a real determination there. I think it was exemplified by the battle he got into with Mugabe, and there was a moment where he went seemed to go into career into about five tackles in a row, and rather than even laying the ball off, he just wanted to win that battle. And, you know, as much as, you know, it's great to see, as much as you'd rather he just laid the ball off, it at times it's great to see that he was really, really up for it and he, you know, determined to work hard for the team, because it must be really easy if, you know, he's not stupid, he'll know that he's nowhere near first choice, but to go out there and put your body on the line like that, and I think he's shown that he's got enough to offer, you know, that level of quality for third choice striker and that level of application, You can't ask for much more, and you can't expect much more, you know, for that level of position in the squad. I think he's done himself no harm in these few games, and you know, he's really contributed at a time when we need him. You know, we said a few weeks ago we need Jacky Mackis to step up, partly because we had nobody else. We knew Maeda was away. We knew that Kyogo was out injured long term. And see, to be honest, and I think he will contribute again throughout this season. I'm sure he's got another couple of important goals left in him. But see, even if that was all he contributes for this season, he's got us through this really, really tough and important period of games. And I've been impressed by him. And fair play to him, because you know, first half of the season, looking at what he contributed, you didn't think that he necessarily had that in him, and he's came back with a bit between his teeth and looks really determined to make a real go of it and make a real go of his Celtic career.
Omani, impressed?
I mean, it's, firstly, I'll say though, you being his biggest fan, you really should learn how to say his name properly. But you know, we'll come back to that another day, mate. You know, I'm impressed by him. You know, in terms of, we know he's more limited, and we know that he's third choice. But I think weekend exemplified what he's good at. You know, as much as we talk about Scottish football being, you know, full of cloggers and things like that, it's still good to see him competing with guys like, you know, up against McGabby. You know, that physical battle and that kind of determination. You know, it's gritty. It's not what this team's particularly about, but it's nice to have there. And there are qualities to his game that, you know, our other players don't have, and I don't think we should necessarily kind of write them off. I think, you know, we've already said that he's third choice, but he's going to have a role to play. You know, he is going to play a part this season. He's not just a guy that you forget about. He will come on in certain instances and he will contribute. I think, you know, a goal or two would help with his confidence and maybe bring some more people on side with him. He has scored some nice goals recently, but I think, you know, if he adds a couple more to his game going forward, people will start to think about him, maybe not as an integral part of the side, but an important integral part of the squad. And I think, you know, we've touched on that in the midfield. There's going to be games where you're going to want to play Jacky Mackis and rest Kyogo or, you know, rest Maeda. So he shouldn't be dismissed. But I think everybody's comfortable with where he is in the pecking order. But that's fine. You need players like that at times.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously saw Maeda had started out left and then went through the middle second half. And Maeda looks far better through the middle himself, which, you know, I think probably if most of us were thinking, maybe before Abada's last couple of performances, right enough, but I think a lot of us were waiting to see Maeda, Kyogo and Jota up top. I think the way Abada's played and the way that Maeda looks more comfortable, more kind of effective through the middle, you would have to say that probably with Kyogo fit, Maeda's even on the bench. You know, I mean, he really will be second choice and not kind of shoehorned into either side.
It depends. I mean, I can't remember if it was discussed on the agenda or not, talking about Maeda on the left when Kyogo's back, if that's going to change the way that he plays on the left. I don't know. I don't think we've seen enough of Maeda yet to kind of firm up where he's best and what his position is. We'll see how that goes on just now. But as it stands, you know, right now, if everybody's fit, you want Kyogo playing through the middle.
Absolutely. Hey, it's scary to think what this team might be like with Kyogo. No. He's not even there. So, listen, 4-0. Maeda obviously getting his goal. Not fortuitous at all. Beautiful technique for that last goal. Just to round up the Motherwell game, beautiful interview with Thomas Patrick Rodgick after the game, where he said, how does it feel to be on top? And he said, we've been on top for the top of the pile for the last decade. Absolutely delicious. More than that. Tam had an arrogance and a confidence about him I've never seen, other than in the bedroom, but I don't like to disclose that too much. But anyway, we shall move on to tomorrow night. So, Manny, we're away to Aberdeen. This is our you know, we don't have another league game, I think, for a couple of weeks because of the cup game, and we've got the European games midweek and things like that. But you know, and even that is at home to Dundee. So this game against Aberdeen, I think on paper you would think, or you know, maybe if you don't look at form in the league position, you would think, right, you know, this is going to be a tough game. We need to try and get through this, get up to Pittodrie and things. Aberdeen are currently seventh. They've got one win in the last five games. It's been a very much a kind of up and down season for them. They've had a few good results, looked as if they were kind of building up ahead of steam, and then it all falls to shit. You have, I mean, we've been doing this for long enough. I kind of know your thoughts on going up to Pittodrie. You don't really see it as much of a kind of worry as what we maybe used to in previous years. How are you feeling about this one?
I mean, our record at Pittodrie is so good that, you know, you see Aberdeen at Pittodrie and you automatically go, that's a hard game. And I'm going to say that today because, you know, the last thing you want to do is jinx it. But generally speaking, we go up there and we do the business, you know. And the way the form that we've shown, the fact that we can rotate and change things as well if it's maybe not working out. Again, if you go up there and your first 11 aren't particularly firing on all cylinders, then quite frankly, you know, it can go pear-shaped. They've had a good result against Rangers recently, despite, you know, their run of form. But the way that they play football, unless they change tact, they're not going to sit in and, you know, just kind of hope, you know, defend for their lives while we come at them. And that should play into our hands. So if we play the way that we played against Rangers and the way that we played against Motherwell, I don't envisage any problems. The problem, the caveat to that is, you know, are we capable of doing that or keeping doing that? And the fact that it's an away game against Aberdeen as well. I'm totally backtracking. I can't believe you threw me under the bus there, Louis, saying that I just said it, we breeze it up at Pittodrie all the time.
Well, you have said that for years, to be fair. Callum, how are you feeling about it? I mean, I must say I'm a wee bit worried. I'm just cynical, I suppose, hence why I'm here. But it's just like, not so much the result, but the performance. Like, we've set the bar so high. Can we really keep that up? Like, every 3 days, can we reach those levels? Like, are we going to be able to do that? Or was the Motherwell game us kind of riding the crest of a wave type thing after Wednesday night? And this is undoubtedly going to be, it's going to be tougher. It's going to be tougher than the weekend, getting up to Pittodrie, I would imagine, especially against them who need to win, probably. You know, they've got aspirations to try to get in the European places and things like that. They're going to have to put in a performance. Do you think we can maintain it, or do you think we might see just a natural bit of a dip in kind of performance levels?
I think we can maintain it because I think it's a pretty easy proposition to put to the players of, you know, one last, you break the season up into small chunks and you say one last push here and we've came through, you know, arguably our toughest run of fixtures with the size that we've played. And then you've got a cup game at the weekend where you're at home against lower league opposition, you've got a chance to rotate, and, you know, you can really put everything into tomorrow night. So I think there's certainly the motivation will be there to do it. You know, I'm slightly concerned in that arguably two of our hardest league games so far have came against Aberdeen. We got the late Jota goal up there early in the season in a game where we really needed to win, and for large chunks of it we didn't. We looked fairly ordinary, and I think that was a big psychological win. And then when we played them at home, we get the goal deflected off Cal Mac's arse. So at no point have we torn them apart this season in a way that makes me think it will be a stroll. But the form that this side's in now and the amount of options that we have in terms of off the bench and even options to start, you know, there's real competition for places. I don't see any reason why we can't continue that form. And it has been a happy hunting ground for us in recent years, and it would be nice to see us go in and put in a performance. And sort of like you said, we've not got another game for, you know, another 10 days in the league. You get that done and you focus on the two cup games, which are a bonus right now. The league's the priority, and then Bodo Glimt comes and that will take care of itself. But Yeah, I think we've got more than enough quality, especially with the players coming back, and you know, Idiguchi also possibly being an option for rotation at the weekend, that we can really put everything into the game tomorrow night. And I don't see it. I always feel with this Ange side, if we get an early goal or score within the first half, then we're usually pretty comfortable. It's only when it gets to half time then you begin to get a bit nervy, and I think that sets into the players as well. But if we go out there and start the game with the right attitude and the right tempo and move the ball quickly, I don't think any side in this league can live with us at the minute.
Absolutely. That'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Aberdeen get beat off at Livingston at the weekend. They lost 2-1. Away to Livingston. Livingston also demand sent off. Scott Brown was on the bench for that game. I don't know if he had an injury or anything. I've not seen anything. I didn't see Sports Scene or anything, but he didn't even come on in the game. He wasn't a substitute or anything, but it'll be interesting to see that kind of midfield battle, you know, with him and Ferguson and Ojo or McGeoch possibly, depending on how they set up. How should we set up, Somani? I mean, the back five, I suppose, picks itself. Midfield three, who would you go with?
I would probably go McGregor, Hatate and Rogic, purely because Rogic is 2 goals, and again, his history at Pittodrie, it's a happy hunting ground for him, much like Fir Park. And that's a wee bit unfair on O'Reilly, because I think he's a fantastic footballer. He's another guy who you're thinking, how long are we going to be able to hang on to him if he keeps playing the way that he's playing? But I would go with that three to start, certainly. Again, with the caveat that we're able to change it up, no problem if need be.
You've mentioned the Gooch a few times tonight. Would you like to see the Gooch?
Me?
At some point, not start, but at some point.
Yeah, but fitness pending, you know. Obviously, I'd like to see him coming on to mop things up, you know, when we're a few goals up. But he's a guy who... Yes, indeed, mop up. It'd be good to see, you know, he's a guy that you can't really make a big determination on, because he's played so few minutes and was kind of cynically scythed down against Alloa. But, you know, from what you have seen of him, he looks as if he's maybe not as dynamic as some of the other midfielders we've got, but he certainly looks as if he's able to play that six role effectively and get the ball forward. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him, but he has to bide his time in terms of possibly starting games.
Callum, yourself?
Same midfield three for me. The Tom Rogic factor at Pittodrie just edges it for me, and that is harsh on O'Reilly. Back five is pretty much settled just now, and I think we're all comfortable with that for the rest of the season, especially after what we've seen in the past week. And then, you know, up front, you have Abada has to start, Jota has to start, and the only real question is who plays through the middle. And as much as I praise Giakoumakis, because I think he's been really good and hardworking recently, I'd like to see what Abada offers against a more traditional, you know, traditional Scottish centre-backs, and that I don't necessarily always want my Celtic striker to be going up and winning the physical battle as much as it was good to see at the weekend. I'd like to see Maeda's movement and pulling players, you know, into different positions and how that can work. I think Giakoumakis is also a really good option off the bench, but I'd really like to see Maeda get a run through the middle, because just purely selfishly, as a Celtic fan, you want to see more of Maeda, because there's been glimmers there and real signs that he's a player, but he's not quite had enough game time yet. And you're just excited to see more of him. That's the kind of player you want to see. He's so aggressive, he's so fast, he just, you know, constantly plays the game at such a speed. And I think especially in away games, in the league, I think he'll cause teams real problems, because he won't give them a minute at all. So Maeda would be my choice for through the middle.
Yeah, I would agree. I would. I'd like to see him. You know, we've mentioned earlier that Giakoumakis is going to be, he is the third choice. Well, Maeda's the second choice. Let's play him ahead of him, if that's going to be the pecking order. And I agree with you. I think we want to see more. By all reports, he was probably one, maybe even more than Hatate, he was the even bigger talent, the one that was more expectation on coming from Japan. So we've seen it in glimpses, but we've no, he's no maybe had quite the opportunities, obviously going away and things like that, to really show us what he's all about. But this would be a great stage for him to do it. The other thing, just quickly, Ange had made comment, obviously Deguchi being back in training, but also said that Kyogo was, what, 2-3 weeks behind Turnbull in recovery, and Turnbull's obviously nowhere near it just now. So a bit of a worrisome, Annie, and I suppose it goes back to that conversation about the likes of Giamakis being in and about things. We are going to see plenty of him and Maeda being the ones to kind of battle it out for that position for the next, well, foreseeable, really.
Yeah, we went to the well too often with Hugo, didn't we? You know, with the cup final, the Betis game, you know, people questioned why he came on in that game, but we don't need to go back to that. And then obviously against St Johnston, and it's almost like it was too much for him. So if he's out for a long period, it's really important to have guys who are able to come in and kind of take up the mantle so that we're not rushing them back. You know, see if he is going to be out for another, I don't know, 6 weeks, couple of months or whatever, you know, and these guys are contributing, it could be huge for us to bring him back in the latter stages of the season. But, you know, right now you put him out of your mind, unfortunately. And, you know, you want Maeda to step up to the plate. Crucially, though, I think we're getting goals from all other areas. We're not relying solely on our central striker contributing. But, yeah, it's you know, the stage is there for Maeda now, isn't it, to try and kind of stake that place as his own.
Yeah, I think we'll obviously kind of wrap it up there, and we'll talk more about the Aberdeen game obviously next week. One other player, just quickly to mention, Ben Doak, who came on in the latter stages of the game against Rangers. He wasn't on the bench at the weekend, but again, probably, hopefully, just ask a lot of them and not injury concerns. But it'd be interesting if he makes a return to the bench, if we see a wee bit more of him. Certainly, kind of, again, highly thought of and coped with the high-pressure scenarios that he was put in. So hopefully we do see him again. This has been a pleasure, gentlemen. A great week. Seven goals over two games. We can't ask for much more than that. A Celtic team who, as we've said, are a joy to watch. We've kind of got to temper our joy and our expectations at this team. But, you know, it's nice having a podcast where you really don't have a negative word to say about anybody in a Celtic jersey. Quite the opposite. So, Callum, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks. Hopefully I'll be back soon, my man. And Christopher Salmani.
Pleasure as always. A bit too positive for me and you, Louis, but... We'll take it well at last.
Let's be negative as fuck next week. let's just pick somebody. Greg Taylor, probably. anyway, this has been the Cynic Weekly. I've been John Smith, and we'll speak to you down the road.